It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Colon cancer is the second most common cancer-related cause of death in the United States. Usually those over 50 are urged to be screened regularly, but not everyone does. Many people are hesitant to undergo a time-consuming colonoscopy, which requires a day of cleansing and then having a tube moved up through the large intestine. But now, the Food and Drug Administration has approved a new method that is straight out of the sci-fi movie Fantastic Voyage, the capsule colonoscopy, which uses a camera inside a capsule that a patient swallows. Here to talk about the potential for the capsule colonoscopy is Dr. Edward Chu, director of the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And also with us is Dr. Peter Lebovitz, gastroenterologist with the Allegheny Health Network. Good to have you with us, Dr.
Thanks.
Lebovitz.
It's Paul, actually.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, that should be easy enough to remember. Because after all, I'm a Paul, too. Dr. Paul Lebovitz, gastroenterologist with the Allegheny Health Network. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Good to have you with us. And if you have a comment or question about the capsule colonoscopy, our number is 412-246-2002 to join the conversation. 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Are you someone who should have had a colonoscopy by now but has not? Would this make it easier? Again, the number 412-246-2002. And before you can really answer that question, we need to find out more about it. So, Dr. Chu, I'll go to you first. How does the new technology, the PillCam, work?
So basically, how this technology works is that you actually swallow, right, a pill, and that actually there's a camera that actually can take pictures of the intestine. Now, in truth, I think, you know, this is an interesting advance, but I would say actually it's still really too early from my perspective to say that this is the new standard. You know, just not too long ago, one of the big challenges with this pill camera approach was that actually there wasn't sufficient battery time so that you could actually get pictures going down to the small intestine, but that actually the large intestine, which is what we're looking at, the colorectal region, actually the battery time was insufficient so that you couldn't actually get good images. So I think, truthfully, it's still really too early to say whether or not, you know, this test will become a standard of care, because certainly in my view, I think colonoscopy really should be still considered the gold standard for colon cancer screening.
And will this new colon cancer detection device, the PillCam, will it one day perhaps replace the old-fashioned colonoscopy?
So I'd be interesting to hear what my colleague,
all right, let's
Dr.
What,
Lebovitz, has to
let's
say.
Let's hear what Dr. Paul Lebovitz has to say.
What I would say is no, because at the end of the day, one still has to go in and have the GI specialist, which Dr. Lebovitz is, go in to visualize, to biopsy, and then to have the pathologist review what that biopsy specimen shows.
So Dr. Paul Lebovitz, let me put that question to you then. Will this new colon cancer detection device replace the old-fashioned colonoscopy someday, do you think?
Right. So I agree with Dr. Chu. I think the answer is probably going to be no, but I think I'll start off with by saying anything that gets someone in for colon cancer screening of any modality is what we want. As you know, whenever we do these other screening techniques, it often leads to the colonoscopy. That's the least common denominator. If you find polyps, for example, or the growths that lead to cancer, you still need your colonoscopy. So if we have patients who can't or don't want to do colonoscopy, but a capsule would get them there, then we would say yes. But I would agree with Dr. Chu. I think it's unlikely this will be something that supplants it. We've had capsules in our practices for years. We actually use them, as Dr. Chu had said, to look at the small intestine. So we're kind of used to these things, but it doesn't really kind of do what we need to do overall.
As I understand it, the detection rate for the PillCam is about 70% accuracy, and that the old-fashioned colonoscopy is 95%. So if, as you say, the PillCam encourages people to at least get that much done, are they running a risk of having undetected colon cancer if the success rate is only 77% and that's all they do once every 5 years?
So the answer is yes in the way you're asking the question. So if we
yes,
had two
there's a risk factor.
Correct. So if we compare those two options, it would be better for the patient if they want to capture as much of the cancer that they can when doing a colonoscopy versus the capsule endoscopy. But if you're comparing a capsule endoscopy versus nothing, then a capsule endoscopy would be a better choice.
And the drawbacks of this are that, you know, you've got that risk, but at the same time you're saying at least it gets people to come in, and it's obviously less invasive. It's something that may – can it be conceivably, Dr. Chu, a stepping stone? Once somebody at least gets that done, they might say, okay, I've done this much now. I now realize I need to come in and get the colonoscopy.
Yeah, so I think, you know, maybe just to take one step back, you know, to let people who are listening today realize that March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, right? So, and I think the whole idea of Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month is really to spread the word and gospel about the critical importance of screening. And so I think, as Dr. Lebowitz said, what's really quite striking here in the United States, really only at most, maybe, I don't know, what would you say, Paul, 40 or 50% of Americans at risk, right, average risk individuals, so those individuals more than 50 years or older, right, are not being screened here in the United States, which is really quite remarkable because most of, you know, the countries in Europe and Asia, countries that actually have socialized healthcare systems, the percentage of individuals getting screened, I suspect, is probably much higher.
Right. I would agree. I mean, this is the second leading cause of cancer death in this country, yet we do much better with breast cancer screening, for example, in this country. And so it's one of those areas, and part of it is, as you described, because of the difficulty with our screening techniques that has led people not to have it. But the truth of the matter is, and we've all been through colonoscopy, as you have as well, you can get through it, and it's really done relatively easy, especially a colonoscopy, for example. So if we can get patients to come in, that's what we need. I completely agree. You know, we need to use this time and this month to get people in. This is a disease, really, that we can prevent, and we have data suggesting that we can do that. So it's something that could change a person's life.
And, yes, I have had a colonoscopy, and it was not nearly as bad as I imagined. I think you tend to imagine – when you think about things without actually having gone through it and know what it's actually like, you imagine the worst. And I did, and it was far easier than I ever could have guessed. And I was glad that I did it because now I don't have that weighing on my mind. So I'm imagining that other people will feel the same way.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there is this tremendous psychological barrier about, you know, taking the bowel prep, you know, the day before and not being able to eat for quite some time. But I guess, you know, the point to emphasize is that's, you know, slight discomfort, right, to have, say, screening done. And again, colonoscopy really probably, at least as of 2014, should be viewed as the gold standard. Because if one can, right, identify polyps, one can have the GI specialist remove them. So that's a form of prevention.
And describe what a polyp is just for people that don't know. This is the first – it's a benign indication that – colon cancer is formed.
Yeah, so a polyp is a benign growth, but we know that really pretty much in order for someone to develop colon cancer, it has to start from this polyp, this benign growth. And in most cases, it takes somewhere between 8 to 12 years to go from a polyp, a benign growth, to a real cancer. But the thing is, so if the polyp is removed, you're basically then taking away the cause of cancer, but also if at the time of colonoscopy one identifies real cancer growth, then actually hopefully one can detect it at its earliest stages. And we know at its earliest stages we can cure upwards of 90 to 95% of patients. So I think many of us would say that it's a small price of discomfort, you know, the day before the bowel prep to hopefully be actually cured of this disease.
So it's just about early detection and doing it at a rate that increases the chances that will happen. Dr. Lebowitz, what do you think is the reason that people have such reluctance to undergo colonoscopies? And also why it's more pronounced among women? Do we know why that is?
Why more women don't choose to do it?
Correct.
So I think there's many things that play a role in this. I think the first is really what you've described is it's really what people think is very different from what the reality of the situation is. The second thing about colonoscopy is it does take time away from work. And it does mean that you have to – for people who really are working three jobs and they don't have that time, it means looking for a vacation day. And I think people feel there are better things to do often on a vacation day than coming in to visit me. I think the third issue is that we use anesthesia. So many people are fearful of being sedated and going under anesthesia. So it's something we have to make them comfortable about and make sure they understand it. And I think the last is that there are risks. So this, like, unlike doing a stool test, for example, that has no risk to it, colonoscopy does have associated risk to it. So I think those play a role in it. I also have to say we've done a poor job in meeting certain parts of the population, like you said, women, minorities. We really haven't done a good job in education and getting out to communities and really getting those people in, which is something that we're all struggling and we work hard on at this time.
And the procedure with the anesthesia, normally it's done in a way that doesn't necessarily knock the patient out.
So you're still breathing on your own. So many think of anesthesia, of being put on a breathing machine, for example. That's not true for this kind of sedation. In this sedation, the patient's still breathing on their own. There is someone monitoring their airway and making sure they're doing fine, but most people don't remember much about the procedure. And so they wake up feeling actually quite refreshed.
Yeah. Well, I remember literally talking to the doctor before they started, and the next thing I knew, I was in another room, you know, waking up from what seemed like a deep and very restful sleep.
Absolutely.
And it was on with the rest of the day. There are certainly other developments in colorectal research in addition to the pill cam. Can we talk about some of those, including the stool sample test? You mentioned it, Dr. Lebovitz. It's known as the fecal immunochemical test, or FIT. How far is that coming along?
So again, I'm sure Dr. Chu has more as well. I think, as you know, it has come to market. It's been on the market now for a year or two. It has some significant advantages over the stool cards that we used to do and the way we used to test. But I think, again, you know, FIT testing doesn't have the strength or the power behind it of the research that we've seen with hemocol testing, which is when we used to do the stool cards, or for colonoscopy or flexible sigmoidoscopy. I think FIT testing plays a role in this in the future, and I think we'll continue to see it. One thing that's nice about FIT testing is more people who have a positive FIT test come in for their colonoscopy than people who don't have the FIT test. Hmm. So if, again, gets my patient to say, okay, now I'll have the colonoscopy, we're all game.
Yeah, I think it's a good initial screening tool. But again, I think at the end of the day, it doesn't help to determine where the abnormality is. And it also doesn't tell us if something is benign or cancerous. So at the end of the day, right, still one needs to go to the gastroenterologist and have the colonoscopy so that you can visualize where the abnormality is and then have the biopsy and then to review the tissue specimen by our pathologist.
We are talking about some of the latest means for screening for colon cancer with Dr. Paul Lebovitz, who is a gastroenterologist with the Allegheny Health Network, and also Dr. Edward Chu, director of the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute. A few minutes remaining with these gentlemen. If you would like to take advantage of the opportunity to get some free medical advice, if nothing else, at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. And I'd specifically like to hear from somebody who is over 50 but has not had a colonoscopy yet. Why haven't you? What are the things that you're nervous about? And maybe the doctors can clear up perhaps some misconceptions that you may have. One thing that you mentioned, Dr. Chu, was that in Europe, people are less reticent to have this procedure done. And you mentioned socialized medicine in a number of countries, which in fact exists there. Is cost a prohibitive factor here in the United States? And what will the Affordable Care Act do to maybe ameliorate some of those concerns?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's no question, I think, for a number of years, there have been concerns about what the cost would be of, you know, screening everyone in the United States who's at risk for developing colon cancer with colonoscopy. I think the other concern that people have raised is whether or not there are enough trained individuals who could do the colonoscopy procedures. But I would just, you know, I guess identify two areas in this country that kind of actually function like a nationalized, socialized healthcare system. One is the VA, the veterans population, and the other is Kaiser Permanente, which is out on the West Coast. And in both of those situations, I think the incidence of colon cancer screening is upwards of 85-90%, which is really remarkable. And I think both of those institutions have made the decision that it's well worth the upfront cost of having, you know, their individuals undergo the colonoscopy screening that will far outweigh any, you know, that is much, much cheaper than the cost of making a real diagnosis of colon cancer and then having to come to either see the surgeon or myself, the medical oncologist.
And now they've actually legislated that colon cancer has no copayment, so screening. So what used to be a barrier, which is many patients who had high deductible or other issues around that, their insurance will now cover their colon cancer as long as for screening. Not that there couldn't be costs associated if we take a polyp out, but it really has become significantly better in terms of not having that as a barrier.
Let's take a call from Paul in North Fayette Township. Paul, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. We now have three Pauls in the room. Paul, go ahead.
Good thing. Thanks, docs. Thanks for taking the call, too. I just have a concern. I think I picked up the tail end talking about insurance companies. I didn't gather all that, but my wife's a cancer patient, and she's been fighting cancer for 6 years, and there's always a concern of the proper test. I'm looking at this from a colon perspective. My fear is two things. First of all, from the person's situation themselves, maybe they take and they swallow the pill and they see nothing. Well, you know, and then I take it to the next step and they say, well, geez, I haven't saw anything, so why should I bother? And then the other question or the other point being made is, you know, insurance costs money. My fear is, in the case like my wife, I was speaking about my wife, a CT scan is good. And again, I'm not a professional, but just from talking and being involved for over 7 years on this, a CT scan has limitations. And that's usually the first scan that takes place. And then they follow up with an MRI, which is more expensive. Now, typically, from the few experiences I've had with other people, a CT scan always seems to be that's the test right now because that's what the insurance companies support. You have to have a problem for the MRI to take place. In relationship to that, my concern is, again, besides the person just looking past, I've swallowed the pill and everything looks fine, my concern the insurance company says, well, wait a minute, you didn't find anything with the pill. Why are we having to pay for the colonoscopy? Because it is much more invasive, it's much more time-consuming, it's much more costly. I experience a colonoscopy, and believe me, people get a colonoscopy. It's not a big deal. It gets it done. It just takes them the time to do it.
Paul, that's great advice. Thank you for sharing that. And doctors, what about Paul's concern about insurance and if it will cover a clean test?
So I think it's a
Dr. Paul Levin.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think that what puts up is, again, the statement about screening, and that is if we can use our best test first, most likely we're going to really reduce cost overall about it. But he's right. That is, if you can't choose multiple screening techniques, unfortunately, that insurance often won't pay for that. So if you can't have a colonoscopy and then decide to have a CT colonography to follow unless there's a reason for it. But I remind everyone, it is more important to come in for a test. Let's get you in. And if you do a stool test and it's positive, the insurance would cover the colonoscopy. If you did a FIT test and it's positive, the insurance would cover a colonoscopy. If for some reason you had a CAT scan that showed an abnormality on it, you would get the colonoscopy. Or you could just get the colonoscopy, which is what we would probably all encourage people to do.
Let's go to Vincent in Pittsburgh. Vincent, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, good afternoon to you. Thank you. Just a couple quick comments. I've had three done now together, Paul. And this last one that was done a couple months ago, the pre-prep preparation was not as difficult. So, you know, to pass on to other people that maybe have a paranoia about the things you have to drink, and the prep was a better tasting. It was just it was just not such much of an ordeal. So they've kind of changed the protocol for the prep, which I really appreciated, number one. And number two, as a person that's had it three times now and turning 63 soon, from the physicians, what in the future on down the road, should I be getting it closer together instead of every 5 years? Should I be doing it every 3 years? Or what's the advice as someone ages? Do you get the testing done more sequentially closer together?
That's a great question.
Yeah, it is a great question. And in truth, I'm not sure there's really a right or wrong answer in terms of what the time frame is in between, you know, colonoscopies. I think there's no question if there's a very strong family history of colon cancer. So like you, I've actually had four colonoscopies. I'm actually due to get my fifth colonoscopy. I'm actually already a couple of months behind schedule. My first colonoscopy when I was age 28, and the reason for that is my mom's baby brother, although he wasn't so much of a baby, he was in his late 30s, was diagnosed, unfortunately, with metastatic colon cancer. So, you know, the general, I guess, rule of thumb is that if there is a strong family history of colon cancer that presents before the age of 50, then a family member should get colonoscopy screening 10 years beforehand. And then I think a lot depends on what one finds at colonoscopy. I think if it's stone cold clean, then probably, like in my case, I've not had any polyps, then we've kind of decided every 5 years. I think if any of your colonoscopies had identified a polyp, you know, one of these benign growths, then probably the time interval would be shorter. But that's kind of truthfully where I tend to defer to my gastroenterology colleagues. And so I don't know, Paul, what would you generally recommend?
Right. I mean, I think that in my opinion, it's a complicated question about interval screening. And I think it's really the gastroenterologist with the patient's interest and needs really should sit down and make the determination. We have national societies that have recommendations about that. We know that in a low-risk population, no family history, no other risk factors, a beautifully prepped colon that was done with no polyps, you may not look for another 10 years. For someone who has a polyp, then we might want to take that to 5 years. If you have a polyp and your parent had colon cancer, it may change the way we go about it. I think as part as aging, that becomes a little bit of a more difficult question. I think we might have much data after the age of 75, but our patients live to 90 and 100 now. So the way I framework with my patients, if you think you have 10 years ahead of you, it's still worth screening. So we have done colonoscopies on patients over the age of 75, but it's a discussion you have with your primary doctor or with your gastroenterologist and to get that answer.
So if in doubt, keep getting them.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me.
Our thanks to our guest, Dr. Paul Lebovitz, gastroenterologist with the Allegheny Health Network, whom you just heard there. Also with us, Dr. Edward Chu, director of the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up, we'll meet the Pennsylvania teacher who feels so strongly standardized testing is ruining education, he made a documentary on the subject. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.